Welcome to Simple Living Works, episode 75. I'm Jerry Iverson. It's my pleasure to be your host with my guest, Jim Getch, from Friends of the Third World. If you're new to this podcast and would like more basic information about Simple Living Works, please listen clear to the end. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye at my cue. In addition to job training for needy people in Fort Wayne, Indiana, the House of the Friends of the Third World helps sell products made by exceptionally enterprising groups in the Third World, including Bombalulu Workshop for the Handicapped in Mombasa, Kenya, as well as trying to help Nicaraguan medical aid. Friends of the Third World began in 1972 when friends and students formed a fundraising project to aid the hungry. Friends of the Third World currently operates job training programs at its building in Fort Wayne and markets handicraft from 80 partner groups in 35 countries. A most recent financial report shows that almost 80% of the sales price of an item goes back in the form of fair trade payments to the producers. Three paid staff members supervise volunteers who contribute more than $100,000 worth of donated labor in the past year. For more information, visit friendsofthethirdworld.org. Jim's a soft-spoken guy with a lot to say, so please listen carefully.
Well, I have to say right up front that Jim Getch was a classmate of mine at Concordia College. And so I've known him since 1970. So Jim is now the administrator for Friends of the Third World, a nonprofit human development organization in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Now, Jim, my wife Rita and I work in fair trade through an organization called Sharing the Dream in Guatemala. And so our fair trade is very much focused on Guatemala and handicrafts in Guatemala. So tell us, first of all, about the fair trade aspect of your work.
Well, actually, our organization got into fair trade after doing walkathons for several years. One of our members visited the Netherlands and found a world shop there, came back to Indiana and said, we ought to do a shop like that. And so we got a few things with their advice and put them out in the front window, and that's how our fair trade shop started in 1973, I believe. And then we went from there, learning from the Europeans. We found out that the world shop movement at that time was in response to the European governments saying they would help the poor countries, but spending very little money or effort actually doing that. And so these groups in Europe held educational programs and projects, which they called world shops, which they showed about world trade between the developing countries such as India or some of the African countries and the European countries, the rich countries, and tried to show that trade was much better than aid. And so they spent a lot of time making examples of different programs that the UN or development agencies, NGOs, were organizing and how that could be done differently as an alternative.
Well, now, on our travels, I've seen a number of towns, like even in Scotland, you know, that have a sign as you enter the town, this is a fair trade community, so that the fair trade movement has really grown.
That's true. And actually, we have a fair trade designation, a fair trade city, a fair trade town, fair trade university here in the U.S., but it's not very widespread. The nearest one to us is Chicago. To be a fair trade city, you have to spread the fair trade concept to different segments of the local economy, such as churches, schools, government buying habits, community, like coffee shops and so on. When you get enough momentum going in your community, you can be designated as a fair trade town.
I've noticed that the umbrella organizations for fair trade are changing the definition from fair trade to direct trade. Can you tell us what brought about that difference and what it actually means?
Well, I don't believe fair trade is changing its definition. But direct trade is something some people are using at the same time as doing fair trade, or as a different way of doing trade that doesn't include some of the other parts of the fair trade definition. The Fair Trade Federation, which is fairtradefederation.org, and the World Fair Trade Organization, WFTO.org, lists 9 or 10 different ethical values that a fair trade organization, we feel, needs to work towards in order to be considered a fully fair trade organization. Now, some businesses say, well, if I go to Guatemala, if I go to Peru, and I find some farmers there, and I buy my coffee from those farmers, and I arrange to have it brought to my business here in Indiana or Ohio or wherever, that's direct trade, and they feel that they know where the product's coming from, and they're working directly with the producers. But that could be well and good, provided the producers are equal partners in this exchange. Sometimes a corporation will go to a country and trade directly, and almost all large corporations do that, such as Starbucks and so on. And they may be trading directly with the farmer, but they may not be partners with the farmer in terms of giving the farmer a fair share of the selling price, which fair trade is about.
I'm curious that there's really some interesting developments on the production end of fair trade. In some of these countries, that people who are making handicrafts are making some interesting developments. One, for example, is they now have a replacement for ivory, and they have a vegetable substitute for ivory. Just one example. Can you tell us more about that?
I don't think you can maybe make Tagua piano keys, but Tagua is a nut that grows in the rainforest in certain countries in South America, such as Ecuador, Peru, Colombia. We're actually marketing in our store Tagua jewelry. It looks white like ivory. It's ecological because it's a nut that you don't damage the plant. It provides useful employment for people who harvest that, for people who make product out of it. Tagua is not a new thing. Tagua has been imported into some businesses in America since the late 1800s. But what it is an alternative to, say, making artwork out of ivory, which is still happening. Some countries like China don't follow some of the conventions that international people have agreed on and still purchase ivory tusks that, you know, damage the wildlife in some parts of Africa and Asia. But Tagua is a great thing. You can Google it and learn more.
Thank you, Jim. Well, your definition of your organization, Friends of the Third World, is digging at the roots of poverty since 1972. Now, I get the feeling that Friends of the Third World is much bigger than just fair trade. For example, your newsletter is called Friends in Action, and you have another organization called Friends of the Poor. So you sound pretty diversified. Can you give us a bigger picture of the kind of services you provide?
Well, first of all, we're nonprofit and we're organized as a membership organization. So volunteers or people who want to support our mission can become members and choose the board and serve as volunteers on various committees. The main action we've done in the last 20, 30 years is fair trade, because when we started, we would raise money, walkathons, concerts, and so on, find projects that were working in communities in the United States and other countries, give away the money, and then next year we'd have to raise more money, and so on. Fair trade is a way to expand the kind of charity that helps people support themselves over the long term, because they're entering the marketplace in a way that they can control not only their production, but different levels of the distribution of their product. And so fair trade has to do, first of all, with the producer, but secondly, it has to do with educating us as consumers, because whenever we buy any kind of product, if we buy coffee, if we buy bananas, if we buy jewelry, if we buy a T-shirt, when we spend that money, we need to know where different parts of that dollar go. And so if you give a dollar and buy a shirt that's made in a sweatshop, we call it, in Bangladesh, maybe the worker in the sweatshop receives 20, 30 cents. And the rest of that dollar, some of it goes to transportation, some of it goes to the retail store, but most of it goes to some kind of a facilitating middle organization. We used to call them middlemen. And that system of trade always treats the producer with oppression. That producer is never able to get ahead and often is able to, survive only because they rely on these people who take advantage of them. They run short of money. They have to take out a loan. They can never pay it back. So fair trade is a system based on the cooperative model, where the individual producers have a vote, have a choice in how their organization is run, and then they have the opportunity to expand. Like in coffee, they might go from picking the coffee to initially processing the coffee within the country, to having their own truck to bring it to the port, to having a cooperative that can negotiate the price within the buyer countries. And every time that fair trade group of people who produce things gets more involved in the channel of fair trade, they're having a larger and larger voice. So on our side, we spend a lot of time tying the purchase of the product with the other aspects of our lives and their lives. For example, one of the criteria is we want children to go to school and not to be producing the fair trade products. We also are concerned about the ecology with changing climate. You have coffee farmers getting too much rain and losing their crop to disease, to a fungus, or you have a changing climate where they can't grow the coffee, they have to move to another location because the climate changed. So we're very concerned about the environment. And we find that these producers, when they address environmental issues, are teaching us here, because here in the United States, we tend to be more wasteful. And we're learning from them alternative ways of saving resources, when I have a visitor from another country, they just look at me and say, why do you heat the whole kettle of water for tea when you're only going to drink 2 cups? You know, we're wasting the heat to heat the water. We're wasting the water. And you know, they have ways of tying in their production with their entire life of caring for the earth, of having a community where they do other things for each other, such as a literacy campaign so everybody can read, a campaign where they can become part of their local village government, and so on. And so to us, when there's a disaster and one of our partners has suffered from the tsunami, well, we'll raise money and help them rebuild. Or right now we're raising material aid for refugees in the Middle East, especially Syria. And that's part of what we do in our fair trade stores. We educate ourselves about our connections to the larger world. We also bring local unemployed adults into our store so they can learn job skills and computer skills and how to work in a store, so that not only are we marketing things that are produced fairly, but we're using the activities within our organization to involve low-income people in their self-reliance locally. And we've got a couple projects like Nicaragua. Women will produce T-shirts, and up here, as part of our graphics co-op, we'll print messages for local organizations. So you buy a T-shirt that's produced ethically, and you produce a message for the local school, or the local youth group, or the local sports team, or the local labor union. And those messages are printed locally. The shirt is produced fairly, and it's maybe organically grown cotton, so that we don't have to worry about the farm workers who pick the cotton being hurt by that all the way around. So I think that kind of explains why we have so many different things. And sometimes we have different names, just that a group of volunteers has decided that some of our local job training work would be called Friends of the Poor, because Third World is kind of a historical term. When we had the First World, Second World would be the centrally planned economies that kind of Russia and their empire fell apart into smaller pieces. And then the Third World was everybody else concerned about local needs or non-aligned countries with either the East or the West. But I think to us, Third World could be anybody who's poor and disadvantaged and oppressed. We have a federation of 300 organizations across the United States and another couple hundred in Canada that are involved in the marketing aspect of fair trade. Many of them are small for-profit organizations. Many of them are organizations that are started by, say, a former Peace Corps volunteer who went to Peru, met some women. The women produce sweaters. They come back and start a small store selling sweaters from Peru. And they tell the story of the women, and it is truly fair trade. But I think we need to look at our own lifestyle and our own organizations. Every church, for example, that I've been in has a coffee pot. Many churches are serving fairly traded sourced coffees. But most of them, when they're serving it, don't usually advertise very much to the congregation some of the choices that can be made. And I think, for example, there are probably 200,000-300,000 Christian church congregations in the United States, and maybe 5,000 or more serve fairly traded coffees and teas. There's a big market out there just in the religious congregations for making choices for justice whenever they spend some of their corporate dollars. And it could go beyond that, looking at almost every aspect of how you run an organization or a small business or even your household, and how you can be more conscious of the people behind the dollars you spend, as well as some of the environmental concerns that we're all suffering from, changes in the climate that affects the products that we buy and sell as well. And so those are the kinds of concerns that I think all of us need to do. Now, our organization has helped maybe 20 or 30 nonprofit volunteer-run fair trade shops start over the years. And so if anybody has a community group that wants to consider that, I'd be happy to at least talk with them and initially share some of the things we've done or others have done. We can go further if people want. We have some products that we have our own brand of fair trade tea, our own brand of fair trade coffee, and many of the crafts that we import directly. We're happy to share that with other people who are then doing fair trade in their own community. For individuals, we have a website that has a number of items. It's somewhat changing all the time because the producers we work with very often are changing due to their local conditions. They may be refugees, there may be violence, there may be a local climate disaster. And so some of the products we get for a while, and then we have to work with them to develop some new sources. But we'd be happy to work with anybody who wants to start considering doing fair trade or expand it. We're not a franchise like a corporation like McDonald's or Burger King. Each group makes its own decisions. Each group enters the larger marketplace and learns and develops their local connections. And we also encourage people to just meet together. And one of the things one of our members suggested was the idea of a pro-cut rather than a boycott. That means you get together five or six families, and you get together and you talk about ways you can buy food in a more ethical way. Do you want to buy natural foods from a co-op? Do you want to grow in your backyard? Do you want to buy coffee from a fair trade producer somewhere? There are different things. Every social issue can be looked at by your small group, and you can brainstorm various ways you can make those choices that you feel more comfortable with every time you spend your money. You can talk about health care, transportation, clothing, education, foods, any basic issue, and how you can connect with other people in ways that you haven't thought of before. Here in America, if you go to the store, what is the first thing you think of? How much does it cost? When I go to the store, I think of, where did this come from? How was it produced? What's in it? The more we learn, the better choices we each can make.
Now, Jim, do you have volunteers in other parts of the country that have displays and sales for you in the fall and in churches, like other fair trade organizations do?
Yeah, we do. Consignments are a little bit of a burden because when we send out things to a church or to a community group and they keep them for a month or two, I mean, they do great with their volunteers, but then we have to raise money to pay the producer before you ever get those products. And being a nonprofit, our funds are limited, but we do encourage that. Very often, we encourage that organization to start small, and to we have several churches that have a sale once a month, and so after the first two or three months, we know and they know just about how much they'll be able to sell, and we develop a relationship that way. But we'd be happy to both share some of our products and to link them with some of the other fair trade organizations that we feel closest to, especially the other nonprofits like Serve, which is Church of the Brethren, or the 10,000 Villages, which is the Mennonite Central Committee, and there are several others that have been doing international work for a long time.
I noticed that you're a membership organization, so do you have dues, or do you accept all donations? I noticed that you now also qualify for dollars choice, or choice dollars through Thrivent, the nationwide fraternal organization.
Yep, that's true. We suggest that a membership would be $12, but we have some members that give us pocket change because we have a lot of low-income supporters that understand that fair trade, I mean, almost everybody buys something, and so they can become a part of the fair trade movement. Some individuals donate monthly. What we do with some of the funds is to buy from new partners, new producer partners. The other thing we do is we support our local employment training program. We have about 20 adults locally who come here 5 days a week, about 4 hours a day, and hopefully their skills training will become useful to them. And we've trained about, over the last 30 years, we've trained about 3,000 individuals in our work experience. People on food stamps, people with disabilities, people who have to do work because they've been involved with the court system. And so our staff also has made a commitment to live simply. We've got kind of this motto that we think Elizabeth Seton, 200 years ago, used in her ministry, live simply that others may simply live. We try to just live on the things we need. I don't own a vehicle. I'm able to use one of the van for few things. Sometimes it belongs to the shop, but we try to live as simply as possible, because when you're working as partners with low-income people, we don't see ourselves as better than other people. We see ourselves as learners as well as teachers.
Thank you so much, Jim. Blessings on your work.
Okay, well, we hope you could visit one of these days again, and so on. So thank you.
Be well, my friend. Bye-bye now.
Okay, bye.
You've been listening to my conversation with Jim Getch from Friends of the Third World. You're welcome to share your thoughts on these subjects. Email a message to simpleLivingWorks@yahoo.com, on our Facebook page, or on the Simple Living Works blog. Those addresses are given in the show notes at our website, simplelivingworks.org. Click window number 3. We've received some encouragement recently. For example, Lily wrote, "Dear Jerry, it was grand of you to lift up Lutheran Peace Fellowship peacemaking by inviting Glenn Gershmel for a podcast. Thank you for helping bring Lutheran Peace Fellowship into the 21st century this way. It put a smile on my face to hear your voice in this mode also. You have a great voice for it, clear and easy to listen to. Still loving Simple Living Works e-news, thank you for helping so many of us stay on track with such an abundance of resources and ideas. That from Lily Wu in New York City. And Alicia wrote about one of our daily simpler living nudges. Love this one. Really like the daily nudge format. Keep up the great work. To read the latest responses to all Simple Living Works media, including our new daily simpler living nudges, click the link in the show notes. Or click your recent comments in window number 5 at simplelivingworks.org. Time to wrap up this episode of Simple Living Works podcast. If you're new to Simple Living Works and would like more basic information, please listen a little bit longer. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye here. Peace. If you haven't subscribed yet, we hope you will now through iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Remember that you can listen to all episodes of Simple Living Works podcast. They're archived twice. Access them at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3, click Preview, Backup, and choose the episode you want, with or without show notes. Subscriptions to this podcast and our weekly blog are free, and they keep you current automatically when we post something new. Urge your friends to do the same. Remember to like us on Facebook. You can also subscribe in iTunes to my other podcast, The Common Good Podcast, which I produce and co-host with Jubilee One Earth Economics. Send us your email address to receive the monthly free Simple Living Works e-news. Thanks to the band Earth Mama and to John Pitney for the music on our show. This podcast is covered by the Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution Share-Alike license. To learn more about Creative Commons, click on its link on our website homepage. We do not solicit or accept donations, nor do we sell anything. All our resources and services are free of charge. We're an all-volunteer organization. We at Simple Living Works believe that simple living really does work. Voluntary simplicity, choosing to live simpler lives, is a faithful, satisfying, effective, comprehensive way of life. It's not a list of rules nor living on the cheap. It avoids fads, convenience, and deprivation. It's so much more than a hobby. We believe in abundance, that there's enough for everybody's needs, not anybody's greed. We follow the saying, live simply that others may simply live, as our closing theme song proclaims. It's a balance of personal responsibility and advocacy for just public policy. It's more than personal happiness, though that's quite important. Contemporary faith-based simple living is guided by the 5 life standards of Living More with Less, the classic by Doris Jansen Longacre. I've discussed those standards in earlier episodes. The mission of Simple Living Works is equipping people of faith to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly. We extend the mission and resources of the nonprofit organization Alternatives, which served from 1973 to 2011. The 3 parts of our mission are elaborated in text and video. Links are listed in the show notes. We produce a half-hour podcast twice a month, hopefully educational and inspiring for you, your family, and your congregation or group. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works podcast, wishing you well as we strive to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others.